paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is a Monday edition, and well, the weather's just been all over the place. Frank Sennett is here from Crane Chicago Business, comes by, makes the walk across the bridge on Mondays.
Me and Bob Newhart. It sleeted on me, man.
It sleeted on you. And I only bring it up because she's fine, but we just saw a woman just take a tumble right outside the window.
There's a little wipeout, yeah.
There's a little area where there's a metal grating, I think.
And sometimes when women see me, Steve, that...
They fall, do they? Yeah. But she fell forward. I don't know if that was it. All right, so Cranes is out with their top 10 best places to work for 2016. This has sort of been a franchise of yours, right, for 8 or 9 years, I'd say?
Yeah, we've been doing it a while. We got a new wrinkle this year, though.
What's the wrinkle?
It is a dual list. There's the overall best places to work, and then there, for the first time ever, is a best places to work for women in Chicago. And it was based on a survey of more than 1,000 women, and it was commissioned by Cranes and the Chicago Network, the Executive Women's Group. And then we sent reporters out to these workplaces to see if, you know, they were living up to the expectations of women in the workforce.
And what'd you find?
Well, you know, there's a real thirst for a path to advancement, very clear career advancement, high pay, of course, no old boy network, everybody's voice is listened to equally, everybody's got a shot. And as I think you mentioned off mic, there's something
about
that.
Those are my issues, Frank. You know, it's fascinating to me, and I'm not sure, and obviously there's the equal pay, which is a major issue and something that is always going to be important. But when you listen to some of these other issues, like why you would judge a workplace good for a woman, I'm like, well, those are all very important issues to me, too.
And flexibility is another one, which is more and more important to men as well.
And so were there companies on both?
Yeah, there was. One assurance agency was number one on the best place to work for women over 35, and then was number three in the overall best places to work in Chicago. So to your point, and the introduction even says this, there are a lot of common ground areas. But I really love the way that these two lists go in depth.
Right. And so tell me about the assurance agency. What do you know about them?
Well, they're very family friendly. They have a president, Liz Smith, who just recently added a second mother's room to their Schaumburg headquarters. In the insurance industry, they, you know, allow for family and career. They are more flexible. There's a lot of trust, say, employees in not micromanaging, allowing people to do their job, clear path to advancement, all that good stuff. There's a checklist, interestingly enough, across all the best places to work for women. And one of those checkboxes is childcare offered, and that's checked for none of these employers. So that apparently is still not a big benefit unless you're a really, really large employer, but a lot of these other ones are.
Okay, so that means that the people aren't offering the benefit that they should, or that the women who we think would find that important aren't necessarily finding
it
important.
Well, I think, you know, the way to get around that, the hack on that is more flexible work arrangements so that you can get out and go to that school thing or what have you. But, yeah.
It's just interesting to me because I wonder if the genders aren't moving closer together when it comes to how they judge. Because, you know, one of the other things with women was being appreciated, a career advancement.
Right.
Well, come on, I think that's for all of us.
Absolutely. And I think you know, once you hit the equal pay barrier, once that's surmounted, which is a big thing,
sure,
then I think, yeah, you get more and more into alignment.
And shout out as well for the LaSalle Network. Tom Gimbel, the CEO and founder, is on with us every Friday.
My good pal, Tom. He loves to be on lists like this because it's, you know, really what he lives. It's a very, you know, core value for him personally.
So. Yeah, well, I'm sure that we'll bring it up when he comes by on Friday.
But he's not on the best places to work for women list.
No?
So Tom, now he's got another thing he's got to shoot for.
All right, tell me as well about these planned manufacturing districts in Chicago. I know that was a big priority. That predates Mayor Emanuel, right? I think probably Mayor Daley started with that, but they haven't worked so well, and now Mayor Emanuel is going to make some changes?
Yeah, so the city now has 15 districts. They started in 1988. It's meant to provide incentives to keep manufacturing base in the city, to defend the manufacturers against encroachment from residential and commercial developers. And now we see, you know, one of the biggest ones is in that Clybourne corridor, and people are looking at it. It's got shops that rival Michigan Avenue.
Right.
It's got million-dollar homes butting up against some of these district mainstays. There are big facilities like Finkelsteel moved out. So there's a thought, you know, we need to loosen these restrictions up. We need to, in some of these areas, and allow for mixed-use development.
So the idea was Finkelsteel is there. Mm-hmm. We want to make these places affordable for manufacturing. So we're going to limit homes and retail
right.
and things like that.
Right. And so, you know, they're kind of looking at the reality that, in essence, this neighborhood has gentrified itself out of...
In spite of the restrictions.
Exactly. It's encroached all around. And so the proposal that's working its way through the mayor's office and city council, that's kind of in the gestation phase, would have a fee charged to developers that would benefit from the removal of this manufacturing district designation. And that fee would then fund infrastructure improvements, roads, bridges, that make these neighborhoods then, more attractive for mixed-use development.
Talking to Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. Before you go, let's head down to the southeast side, because I remember when the mayor announced that the new CTA cars are going to be made in the Pullman area. I'm thinking, wow, that's great. This is an area that certainly could use the jobs. And there have been some nice announcements for that area, but there's a way to go there, too.
Yeah, so if you look at all these great announcements, it's good news. There were, in 8 days in March alone, 320 new industrial and warehouse jobs added on the southeast side. There's a manufacturer promised to open a 170-person plant in Hegwisch to assemble the CTA cars, as you mentioned, Whole Foods Distribution Center, Ryerson Steel Processing Site in Pullman. Is going to be a Whole Foods distribution center to hire 150 people. But when you add all these up, it's like you're fighting for one job at a time
right.
because manufacturing doesn't take as many jobs. And there's been so much of a job loss of the base down there that it really is kind of a drop in the bucket. So there's still a lot of work to be done. I mean, this is all very good news. But if you look at the collapse in jobs down there, this would just be a small percentage. It'd still be about 75% job loss in manufacturing.
That's Frank Sennett. You could read more about all of those stories at chicagobusiness.com, and we'll ask Gimbel on Friday just why it is that women don't pick one of his workplaces as the best in the city.
He's too tall.
All right, nice to see you again.
Thanks, Steve.
It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, have you paid the tuition bill? College getting more and more expensive, but guess what else is going up? GPAs. GPAs? That's the focus of a story written by Jillian Berman in MarketWatch, MarketWatch.com. And Jillian, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Nice to talk to you again. All right, so I got to tell you, first of all, let's just start with the idea that it's now easier to get an A in college than it ever was before. Explain that for me.
Yeah, well, at least since leading up to the Vietnam War. So now roughly 35% of grades awarded in colleges are A's compared to, the 1940s when that hovered at around 15%.
So one in three grades issued by a college professor is an A to a student.
Right, exactly.
Is there a reason why that is?
Yeah, so there have been a couple eras of grade inflation over the past several decades, but recently, and by recently I mean since the 1980s, one of the reasons actually has to do with the fact that college now costs more. So administrators, college officials, things like that, they are starting to think of college, and parents too, are starting to think of college as more of a commodity that you're providing to a consumer and not necessarily an education that you're providing to a student. So if it's a consumer product, you got to make the consumer happy, and in this case, what makes them happy, an A.
So right, so I'm not willing to shell out 30, 40 grand a year if my kid's going to come home with C's.
Right, exactly.
Even if she or he deserves a C.
Right, exactly.
All right, so this research was done, I got to tell you, by this guy Stuart Rothchaser. Did I pronounce his name correctly?
I think so.
Yeah, Stuart's got a lot of vowels or letters in his name, but he's a novelist too. And I interview a lot of novelists, and I interviewed Stuart about a year ago. He's from Wisconsin, and he has a really fun novel out called The Mathematician Shiva. So you should pick that up while you're reading his research.
Yeah, definitely. I was surprised when I looked him up to find that I had heard of that book and that he was the author of that as well.
Yeah, he's a fun guy, and it's a fun book. Okay, so let's go back. You mentioned earlier Vietnam. Why in the world does Vietnam have anything to do with this story?
So in an earlier era of great inflation, the Vietnam War was actually one of the reasons why professors were inflating grades. So during that time, a lot of professors were giving people a little bit, you know, grades that were a little bit higher than maybe they deserved so that they could keep them from flunking out and, in the case of men, keep them from being drafted into the war.
So the teachers were doing these young men a favor by giving them grades to keep them out of the war.
Exactly, yeah. So they're trying to help them out to keep them in school so they don't have to go to war.
Wow. What is Stewart's prescription for what should be done?
So a lot of individual colleges have policies that sort of get at this. You know, certain schools make the mean grade, require the mean grade to be pretty low so that not too many students get A's. But he suggests that, you know, we take kind of a more national approach to this and just sort of make people aware that it's happening. You know, without that kind of awareness, the grades are just going to keep ticking up and up.
Right. But it is the sort of thing that it's just happening, right? I mean, there's not some sort of evil A-grade cabal out there creating it. It's just sort of a natural phenomenon.
Right, exactly. It's a natural phenomenon, and it happens the average GPA ticks up every year by a very, very small amount. So it's really not noticeable until you kind of look at it overall, you know, over the past several decades.
Well, I definitely think something should be done about this, but my younger child won't be out of college for 5 more years, so we shouldn't start until then.
Yeah, sounds good.
Jillian Berman, great to talk to you. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks for having me.
I always enjoy it. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
Talking baseball. Klazuski, Campanella, talking baseball. The man and Bobby Feller, the scooter, the barber, and the nuke.
1237, Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Danny Ecker's on the phone line as well. Writes about sports for Crane Chicago Business and had some retro names there, I guess. Danny, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk with, I guess there just was a study out today from GoBankingRates.com, puts Wrigley Field at number 2 when it comes to most expensive ballparks to go to. That's probably no surprise. I'm looking here. Wrigley was ranked 2nd most expensive. For 2 people to attend a Cubs game, it costs $116.06. I'm not sure where the 6 cents goes, but that's quite a lot of cash.
Yeah, and it's actually a little bit more. I think those numbers that that site used today were actually, they were using the 2015 concessions figures. So those have creeped up even a bit more. You know, the Cubs raised their ticket prices across the board by 10% this year. So you can add a little bit more to that. But no, it's it remains an expensive proposition to attend a baseball game at Wrigley Field.
And I know that you wrote not too long ago about the fact that it has paid off handsomely for the Ricketts, right? Since they've made their investment, the money's turned come in for them.
Yeah, you know, I think it's been really interesting over the last, you know, 8 years now of the Ricketts' tenure in Wrigleyville, where they've shown this greater appetite for revenue than there was under the Tribune Company ownership, which certainly makes sense. But that's really at the heart of everything they're doing there around Wrigley Field and renovating the ballpark and selling so many more assets to sponsors. You know, trying to both boost their own revenue and the revenue for the team, which allows them to put that back into the team and sign some high-priced free agents, which now they have in the last couple off seasons, and it's starting to pay off for them.
Well, it's interesting, too, because they were met with such goodwill, I think, from the fan base when they came in, because things had gotten so bad that people gave them a little bit time and a little bit of an allowance to build up what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Cubs fans are among the most patient, I guess you could say, in sports.
That's one word, Danny, yeah?
Right. You know, look, this was not easy, an easy road to get here. Let's not forget that it was 2 or 3 pretty lean years there and up until last year where The Cubs, I mean, were pretty upfront about the fact that they were essentially trying to rebuild their entire baseball operation. So I think people, at least Cubs fans, have at least understood what the Ricketts family has been trying to do and what Theo Epstein has tried to do and the plan they put in place over the past few years. And they're starting to see the spoils of that. I think that that's really what most fans, what they just want to have, they ask for. They want to have a plan in place and that you're working towards something and you're going to feel like you kind of know why your team is making a certain move here and there.
Well, you know, you talked about the fact that they are more willing than in the past to try to bring in revenue. Is there another Major League Baseball team that sells naming rights to their parking lots?
There are, actually.
Oh, really?
I'm blanking on who it was. I want to say it might have been, one or maybe two other MLB teams that had deals like that where they were sold naming rights to the actual parking lots themselves. It's kind of like this new, you know, every now and then in sports biz you see teams that kind of, it's contagious with what they're able to sell, and then a certain team signs a partnership with a company like Ford or Toyota or whoever. And then the other teams want to follow suit.
In this case, Toyota. The Cubs have sold the naming rights to their parking lots to Toyota, and they're naming them after models, right? So had I driven a Mercedes to the game, Danny, I might have parked it in the Camry lot.
There you go. And it's definitely, again, it's if you look around and it's not even close to done, it's already so much more signage and branding that there is around the park and outside the park. Not even close to done. Once it's all said and done, it is going to be a highly corporatized, if you will, Wrigleyville.
Is it going to be the same sort of feel? I mean, I've only went a couple times last year, but I know the bricks are still going to be the same, but is it still going to have the same feel as Wrigley Field of old?
It does to an extent. You know, I think that the way I describe it to people and the feedback I think from a lot of Cubs fans was pretty positive when they added the two video boards last year.
Sure.
Mostly because of the way that the Cubs handled it. The way that they put the graphics on there, the colors they used, it wasn't too intrusive. You know, now it's taken some getting used to. The way I describe it to people is that it's just a different experience than it was before. I always tell people you spent a lot of time, there's so much more downtime where you'd sit there talking to your neighbors at the park because there wasn't really anything to look at between innings or to watch or to listen to. And now, you know, it's in many good ways, but it's just there's something to look at. There are still different features to look at like there are in other ballparks. So it's certainly, I think it's changed the experience of going to a game at Wrigley Field, but I think people are very thankful to have plays now and other modern amenities that you get when you have these video boards and the signage. People just get used to it. It comes with the territory now.
I don't want to give White Sox short shrift, so we'll move there in a second. But just physically, what's it going to be like going to the park opening day next week? I mean, I'm assuming there's going to still be a lot of construction. I know security is going to be a lot tougher, so it's just going to be a different ordeal.
Yeah, that's something that I think the Cubs can't stress enough to their fans at this point, is that it is going to be, if anyone's been around Wrigleyville recently, it's still a very, very active construction zone outside the ballpark, and there's not a lot of space to move around. Now, you add that to the fact that for the first time this year, you're going to have to walk through a metal detector, walk through metal detectors at Wrigley Field at each of the gates, which have been around. They were in all the ballparks in MLB last year, but the Cubs kind of got a waiver since they were doing all this construction. But it is going to be a bit of a nightmare, I think, in terms of congestion of people trying to get in. So they are telling everyone as much as they can, you know, plan accordingly, get there early. It's gonna take a while just to get in the building this year.
All right, let's go to the south side. What sorts of things are you expecting there? I mean, not a lot when it comes to construction, but they're hoping for better things on the field, and they certainly had their spring training controversies.
Yeah, as silly as they were, yeah. I guess you could say. But, yeah, you know, the White Sox, obviously they've the story for them, unfortunately, that a lot of people have talked about is the fact that they've had such problems drawing fans to their games. You know, they even though
it doesn't matter, does it, Danny? It almost doesn't matter if they're winning or losing.
Right. Well, you know what? The thing is, one of the good stats I've heard is that there's actually only four teams in Major League Baseball that have never made the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. And three of those four teams have only been around since 1993. The other one is the White Sox. And it's just kind of tough, I think. They've had a hard time. You know, you can't really point to sort of one era of White Sox baseball where there's this, kind of like the Blackhawks have created now with their era of hockey, where you had these fans that are so, that kind of keep harkening back to this era.
Right,
That's one of the things that the Sox have had a hard time doing. But, one of the things that they do offer is it's, relatively speaking, a much more family-friendly in terms of cost of going to these games. They're not afraid to spend money on players. They just, unfortunately, last year didn't see the profits from that in terms of the team not being able to hit. They made a couple more acquisitions this offseason, and they're hoping that that's going to turn it around because they really need to kind of win with a lot of consistency to be able to draw the type of crowds you see elsewhere.
It's a good point. It's that the good eras never last. I mean, 2005 was over, and then it was over.
Right.
I mean, and nothing ever sort of lasted for them.
Right, exactly. So I think that's something that they're battling. But, you know, again, they have the people who follow the Sox, they are very diehard fans as you're going to find in sports. So, you know, I think that that's something that, they know they have, and they need to just be able to turn in a better product on the field, and they know it.
Danny, great to talk to you. I hope we can do it again. Have a great season.
Thanks, you too.
Danny Ecker writes about baseball for Crane Chicago Business. You can read it at chicagobusiness.com. We'll take a break and check in with a magic oven that'll cook whatever you want, however you want. Thank you, Orion, and Kim, and Dolly McCarthy as well. Steve Bertrand here. It's 12:51. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You getting set to maybe cook your lunch? All right. Matt Van Horn is going to talk to us about a new way to do it. Matt, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Excited to be here. Thank you for including us.
You bet. Now, look, I've been reading stories about your oven, about June ovens, and I've read some of them a couple of times. Matt, I still can't get my arms around it. It sounds to me like it's this perfect piece of machinery. You can put anything in, close the door, and whatever you put in comes out cooked perfectly. That can't be true.
That can't be true. That's correct. But it can be true for foods that we are expert in, which is not all of the foods in the world. But we're currently expert in 25 foods, and we're learning more all the time.
Explain for me then how it works.
Sure. So just imagine if you were to take a steak, and you put it in the June oven, and before you even close the door, on the touchscreen, it makes a little noise. It goes, and then it says, I see that you have a steak there, and I'm going to recommend the perfect cook program for it. How would you like it cooked? And you just tap medium rare, and then we'll send you a push notification on your phone when it's perfectly medium rare.
And then you've got your steak.
Exactly.
Is it microwaving everything? Is it grilling the steak? Is it broiling the steak? How's the steak being prepared?
It is not a microwave. It's a dual convection oven. And we have 6 carbon fiber heating elements, and we also have a really nice broil on top. And we can actually write these advanced programs where, you know, we could just bake it at a set temperature till it hits a certain internal temperature, and then at the end broil it to give it that nice crispness on the top.
And you said you're expert at 25 different foods, so that means that you're still working on expanding it, that it's limited in what it can cook?
No, so it's a full functioning oven as well. So just in terms of our recommendations and recognizing foods using our camera in the top, we have 25 food types, but
okay.
You can cook anything in there. It's a full fledged oven. It's about 1 cubic foot cavity. It sits on your countertop, and so pretty much you can fit anything in there, but a large turkey.
Okay, so I could put my frozen pizza in there, heat up the oven the way I want to, time it, cook the pizza just the way I did last night. But the magic comes in with these 25 items that you're expanding on.
Oh, there's a lot of magic everywhere. So there's a beautiful touchscreen on the front. You can use a core temperature thermometer, so you could, say like duck is not a food that we recognize, but you could write your own program for duck using our advanced cook modes, where you could like cook it to a certain temperature, then raise the temperature, then do this. And so you can use those controls even if it's not a food that we recognize, if that makes sense. So it's the most advanced oven that we've seen.
And is this going to be the way we eat in the future? I mean, are you the beginning of what's inevitable?
So for us, we want to lure people back into the kitchen and inspire them to cook more. So we're not into robotic cooking as a concept, but we just want to make the easy things easy. Like, you shouldn't have to worry about, is my chicken undercooked and going right to poison my family, or is my salmon overcooked because I was afraid that I was going to, you know, hurt my family. And so we want you to, you know, not have to worry about those type of things, so you can spend more time on a side dish or a sauce or those types of things.
If I wanted the perfect green bean, could I do it in the June oven?
You could. Green bean is not one of the foods you recognize, but we do green beans very well. We do recognize asparagus right now, as well as Brussels sprouts.
I'll take that on. Those are two of my favorites. I could deal with that. And so tell me a little bit about the business of this, because you're bringing money in for the development. It looks as if it's very popular with investors, but there was a little hitch in the giddy-up. You thought things might go out this spring, and now you've pushed that back to maybe around the holidays at the end of the year.
Yep. Absolutely. So we're super excited that we just announced to the world that we raised a $22.5 million round that was led by Eclipse Ventures. And you're in Chicago, right?
I am, yes.
Yeah, we actually had a Chicago-based investor join the round, Promise Ventures.
Nice.
Starting the round, which we're excited about. And so, yeah, we're bummed that there's a delay, but we're doing it for all the right reasons to spend more time on the product and grow our team and get the product right.
I like that. I don't mean it. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Matt, but you sort of explained that on the website. Like, look, we'd love to rush this out, but we think by waiting several months, we can probably come out with a better product, and that's what we're going to end up doing.
Absolutely. And one of the moments that I'm personally most excited about is we've got a large shipment of ovens arriving from Asia to the office this week, and then for the first time, everyone in the company is going to be taking one home. And so we'll be kind of we live and breathe it every day in the office, but it's not quite the same as having it in your home. So we're really excited about it.
What is the favorite of the foods that it's programmed to cook that it can make for you?
I would say salmon. Our salmon's pretty incredible.
Yeah. You raise a good point, because I am always worried about overcooking the salmon or undercooking the chicken, and this is it's like the thermos. It can keep the hot things cold and the cold things hot. How does it know?
So it's about precise time temperature control. So there's a lot of trends in cooking right now related to sous vide cooking and kind of getting that perfect temperature. And so by having a computer and our software monitoring your food, so we've got a camera in the top that can look at your food to recognize food. We have a weight scale in there. And then we've got, you know, we're monitoring the current cavity temperature as well as your food's temperature. And so by tracking that, we're able to make recommendations on behalf of your food. And we actually have a 2.3 gigahertz processor on the oven.
Pretty cool.
That's powering it.
It's called June Ovens, and you can have it in your kitchen maybe by the end of the year. How's that, Matt Van Horn?
Absolutely, at JuneOven.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you for talking to us today, and I wish you the best of luck.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.